Scott, true or false? Trump once proposed to host his own reality TV show focused solely on firing struggling small business owners with the tagline, "You're bankrupt." True or false?
I'm going to go with false.
Simon
Mann. I think there might be something there, but something about it is not right.
That's way too specific to be made up. I think that's true.
Something about it's not right. That is Trump all over.
No, but the idea of him wanting to do a reality show, obviously, it's obvious. Him wanting to go and fire small business owners, yeah, obvious. You're bankrupt. That's crazy. That's ridiculous. Like,
you think that's true? It's false.
No, want it to be true. If only it was true, that'd have been funny. That would have been up there with Kitchen Nightmares. That's how good the trip would have been. Honestly, they missed out there. They fumbled that one. That'd have done better than The Apprentice.
Trump. So this is Simon. Trump once attempted to trademark the phrase Central Park, hoping to use it exclusively for his properties near the famous New York landmark.
False. Wow, you said false on the last one. Let's go with false.
Any reason?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I was going to say any comment about how likely that is to get through any kind of legal process is kind of irrelevant when it comes to Trump. I don't know. I'm going false just because I think you did false on the last one. What is it?
Madge?
I'm going to go true. In America, someone trademarked the word hun, so... H-O-N or H-U-N, I don't know what the spelling is, so it sounds like something Trump would do, so I'm going with true.
I'm going with true.
It's false.
Fuck my life, Alex.
Jesus Christ, man. Last one,
very last Trump. One.
It's so Trump, isn't it?
Central it's very Trump. Trump. It wouldn't have surprised... Like, the moment you said it, I was like, that's got to be true.
To be fair, Pho did that, or Pho. You know, about, you know, the restaurant Pho. It's a Vietnamese, it's the dish of Vietnam, a national dish. We've got a restaurant in the UK called Pho, so PHO.
Yeah.
And they trademarked the name Pho and tried going after Vietnamese restaurants, which is a bit like trademarking fish and chips. And then,
yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. They did drop it, though, I should say. They dropped the trademark. But yeah, it was because there was a bit of a kickback.
Madge. Trump was true or false? Trump was accused of using charity funds from his Trump Foundation to buy a $10,000 portrait of himself to pay off his business debts.
All right, that one's true. I'm pretty sure that one's true.
Why do you think?
Because I've heard stories about him allegedly taking money from the charity in order to buy stuff with it. So I'm going to say that one's true.
$10,000 portrait of himself, you think?
Yeah, I think I've heard this story. I think. So I want to say that's true. Scott? If not, then someone's going to get sued.
Scott?
I'm going to go with false. I'm going to say there's something wrong with the state. I'm going to say that part of it is true, except, like, the picture wasn't $10,000. It was $25,000 or $100,000.
Doesn't mess around, does he? Simon?
I reckon true for the same reason. Matchday. I might have even seen a picture of the painting. It's pretty ugly, if I remember right.
It's not the artist's fault. They don't have much to work with.
You'd see some of those like little gifs of him. Like there's one I saw the other day after he won, where he was playing the guitar and had all these other people dressed as clowns. But it the stuff they're doing at the moment to make him look cool, or when he looks ripped. Like out the Avengers and...
Oh, that is some serious cultish weird behavior, that. That's fanfic, like, levels of delusional weirdness. Like,
It's really
this
creepy.
This is why I, like, wonder if I'm in an alternate universe. I mean, am I actually the mad one and Trump is actually brilliant? Because you say cult, we're talking more than half of the American voting population. Is that still a cult, or is that just people?
I think that he obviously brought in a lot of people somehow. Unfortunately, it's true, but there is a cult like element amongst his hardcore followers. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you have to be in a weird cult to literally wear like a chain with his face on it. That's crazy. Go on. Yeah.
He had the greatest cult member of all time, the QAnon shaman, on his team. So, you know. The goat, then. The goat, the greatest to ever do it.
The greatest.
He is.
That guy's iconic.
He is, yeah.
It's pretty creepy. I mean, it's like Napoleon on steroids. Napoleon did the same thing. I mean, you know, that was his bread and butter, to do all these portraits of him doing weird stuff. I think one of them was in Accra, where literally Napoleon was going around healing the sick with a touch. He literally made himself into French Jesus.
If he had the QAnon shaman, he would have won.
The answer is, it's true. It was.
Was it $10,000?
$10,000, yeah. $10,000, right. Cheap for Trump.
Good morning, USA. I got the feeling that it's gonna be a wonderful day. The sun in the sky has a smile on cheeks, and it's shining my soul into the American race.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sunday Roast. We are back another week. Scott, can you please introduce yourself?
My name is Scott. Hi. And I am an American living in the UK. So, I think I'm uniquely qualified to speak a little bit about ongoings in America, but I'm no YouTuber or anything. I don't know about it. I'm just here. I'm hanging out.
Hiya, my name's Simon. I run a YouTube channel called The Track Record, where I cover mainly geopolitics with a lot of Mac animation explainers.
Hi, I'm Big Match Studios. I run my own channel, and I'm the co-host of this podcast along with Alex.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm an author, historian, and YouTuber, and I'm also co-host of the show. Right, let's get straight into it. Trump, welcome with a big bang back. Scott, you're the American in this group.
I'm dumbfounded. I'm dumbfounded by the whole thing. I couldn't believe it, and I still almost don't believe it, because, like, and you know, could I be accused of living in some sort of echo chamber? I don't know. But to me, what is so strange is it's like we're watching all these people showing up at Harris's rallies, and people get really galvanized and really, you know, excited about her. And there seemed to be a sort of narrative where Trump was kind of, that excitement wasn't really there for Trump. And to see that totally switched around on result night was really bizarre to me. I'm still in a little bit of shock about it. Like, I sit there and I just can't. 70 million people actually voted for him. Like, that's crazy. He is a convicted felon. He's adjudicated.
If I'm right, he's not allowed to vote, is he? He can't vote as a convicted felon.
He did. And that,
did he?
Yes, he did.
Maybe it depends on where you're convicted. I thought you'd been convicted federally, but maybe it hasn't.
In some states.
Oh, state of New York, wasn't it? I think that got him, so...
Yeah.
Maybe it's not in New York, which is why he moved down to Florida, so he wouldn't have the embarrassment of not being able to vote in New York.
He didn't need his own vote.
How have people back in the United States sort of reacted to this? People that you know?
I think that people I've spoken to are either just as much as in shock about it, or they kind of had argued, you know, the economy and things like that. And I fight back on that every time, because I'm just like, well, the economy or inflation. And I just think, well, wait a minute, inflation happened to everybody. That happened across the entire world. And it really just goes to show and prove how insular Americans are and have become, even more so over the last maybe 10, 15 years. They just don't see the outside of their own little world.
Do you think that's more in reference to the fact that actually their quality of living is really good and they don't appreciate it because they don't leave the US as much? Or is it that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's a lot of people's quality of living in America is really bad, obviously, as well. I mean, but generally, the people that voted for Trump are not homeless. The people that voted for Trump are not suffering. You know what I mean? They are the people that, no matter what he does and what he says, they're going to be okay, except for maybe the Latinos and maybe people of the LGBTQ plus community who voted for him, they might not be as okay. But those things, we'll have to wait and see what happens, you know. I think a lot of journalists are trying to sort of moderate the sort of panic, whereas a lot of leftists are like, that's it, it's over, mass deportations, you know, LGBTQ rights are being stripped. We got to really wait and see what he does, but those are in the plans. Project 2025 was real, you know what I mean? And
Project 2025 follows a conservative political ideology, specifically leaning toward American conservatism, with an emphasis on limited government, individual liberties, and traditional values. It aligns with libertarian economic principles, advocating for deregulation, reducing federal agency influence, and enhancing state autonomy.
I'm disgusted, honestly. You know, I'm disgusted, and you know, and I'm confused. I mean, you know, Scott, you touched on the idea of feeling like you're in some kind of echo chamber. I mean, I said to my girlfriend when it happened, I was like, am I living in some alternate universe? I mean, time and time again, I watched that man do things that I right or left, I just thought were disqualifying. January the 6th, I thought, right, okay. You know, that did happen, didn't it? Like, I'm not just imagining that. We watched that happen. But it's like a child, you know, you catch a child doing something naughty and they're like, I didn't do that. It's like, I just watched you do it. You know, and yeah, I mean, this is how the rebels must have felt when Palpatine came back. You know, it's just, I mean, America is in deep, deep trouble for the next 4 years, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. I mean, my only hope is that the democracy of the country is in a state that in 4 years that they can have a meaningful vote to get rid of him. And that's an if.
Has he taken the Senate? He's taken the Senate. Has he taken
yes.
The House? Doesn't have the House. House. He doesn't have
the House. It's a toss-up at the moment, isn't it? The time of recording.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So he could, I mean, if he does, that means he's got a mandate, a full mandate, if he took all, and he's got the Supreme Court.
We watched the whole country look at fascism. That was what was on the table, and go, yeah, that's, you know, let's call this whole democracy thing a day. You know, we don't, yeah, it's truly baffling. I mean, and I think the answer is that people just live in completely different information universes. I think it's the gut reaction is to call people stupid. I think there's a huge, either apathetic or misinformed constituent there. You know, people that genuinely don't know these things or have been convinced that it's not true. You know, it's
down to where they get their information from.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, there was an interesting poll recently. A lot of countries' perception of the economy tends to track together based on left or right. But in America, people's opinion of the economy tends to much more so follow their party lines rather than the actual economic circumstances.
I slightly wondered with that because everyone kept saying the economy had grown under Biden, it done well. And I looked into the stats and it looked like it was true. But
$465 billion, that's how much richer Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the world's richest men got in the last 4 years, according to a new report from the UK-based charity organization Oxfam. That amounts to $14 million per hour. Oxfam says, on the other hand, nearly 5 billion people are poorer than they were 4 years ago. At least 1.7 billion workers across the world saw inflation rise at a rate higher than their wages. In the last 10 years, more than half of the new wealth created globally has gone to the richest 1% of humanity. And this startling number, 99% of the world's population gets just 37% of new global revenue. Oxfam says a lack of taxes is driving the wealth inequality. Half of the world's billionaires are living in countries where they don't have to pay any taxes on inherited wealth. That top line number, a staggering $5 trillion in wealth, is set to be passed on without a dime of taxes. Oxfam is warning this accumulation of wealth in the hands of so few could exacerbate political divides, cause corruption, and impact economic growth worldwide.
Is the disparity between the rich and the poor? Just because your economy is growing doesn't mean that the bottom 30% are involved in that growth. And I wonder, go on, Scott, I'll bring him
Was really, it was inflation. I had a guy on my, American friend, Michael, I grew up with, on my Facebook going, a Big Mac's $8 now. And I was like, what, you vote for Trump because your Big Mac is $8? It's ridiculous, right? But that's how they think. Yeah. If you know, they're seeing their cost of living going up. They blame Biden for that. And you got Trump, so they're going, well, that's Biden's fault. You know, the unfortunate truth is, I'm sorry, I know you touched on this about them not being stupid. It's designed that the system in America is designed for people to stay ill-informed.
Oh, there's a very big stupid
Yeah, no, but
group of people there as well.
when you look at the American education system, and I know a little bit about it because I went through it, right? And what you were taught the basics to go out and work, right? And you were kept pliable so that when the paymasters tell you something, you will either go and do it or you will think it. So when you think about it, if you can think about it, maybe the system that is built in America is working perfectly. Yeah. So I think there is a massive degree of stupidity. When every time I saw someone question a MAGA person, they did not know what they were talking about.
I kind of
Every
after
is
it,
that,
I
yeah, is that chosen almost propaganda for me to see, or they just don't.
so I mean on that, I mean after this, I went, I you know, I mean I try and do this anyway, but I went, I've got to get out my bubble, and I created a new TikTok account, and I liked all the alt-right loonies, and I went, all right, you've got the floor, let's hear your argument. They don't sound any more intelligent when you listen to them in detail. If anything, they sound more unhinged. You know, it's just, and they're obsessed with culture war issues. The amount of voting intention that's driven by like the 1% of Americans who are transgender. You know, forget the economy, forget democracy. If someone's using a bathroom you don't like, that's what really matters.
Well,
You know,
America was
it's
built on prejudice and racism. At the
That's
end of
true.
the day, and that is a theme that really has never gone away.
I'm gonna have to bring Magin because he
Yes,
hadn't
please.
said anything. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say, I think the economy played a major factor in it. I think there's a lot of there are decent amounts of minorities who, as soon as they go to America, they say we want to cut down immigration. I've seen quite a few videos about that. Trump going on the podcast circuit really seemed to help him kind of appeal to a new demographic of voters as well, who kind of saw him a lot, okay, this guy seems interesting, who may not know about Trump's bad policies, kind of the 18 to kind of young males, I think it was. So I think it's the economy. It was him, you know, going to new media really helped him, getting softball questions on new media, because a lot of those guys are soft. I'm not going to name them, but they're not the best at interviewing. They're good at conversations, but not necessarily asking hard questions. So I think it's that. I think the situation in Gaza, that's definitely a factor. I think the ongoing situation in Ukraine, with Trump saying he would end the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I think that would be a factor as well. Because I can't imagine if you see, I mean, in the UK, you see like the UK arming Ukraine to billions, and then people are like, well, why don't we spend that money here? And I imagine if you're American, you're seeing, you know, tens of billions of pounds going over there, you're thinking, what the hell? But I think inflation was a driving factor as well. I think someone, I think it's Ash Sarkar, posted like inflation's gone up by 22% or something in America in the last few years. And that's a killer. That's a killer. That's killer for a lot of people and businesses. They notice that Americans always cry about their fuel prices. They go up slightly. They're still way lower than us. They still always moan about it on Twitter.
That's because you can't get anywhere without driving. And
Yeah.
it's a very different culture in that regard. That everything's so much more vast. So, you know, it's not like here where you can just jump on a bus and you can be, you know, on the other side of the city in an hour. It doesn't work like that in America. It is a necessity to drive. So again, that's another thing. Whereas I think here in the UK, people didn't like it. They took it on the chin because not everyone drives. So, you know, it wasn't such a big deal. Everyone drives there. Huge deal.
I think you know, all across the West, you know, you touched on inflation for that exact reason. All incumbent governments have had a hard time, you know, and I think we like to think it was scandals, and obviously that was a big bit of it. But you know, I think it was part of what saw the end of the Tories as well.
Yeah,
You
we
know, they
just test.
presided over bad economic times. If only there was something just thinking of it they could have done to put an extra 100 billion in the economy.
I think historically it's the same thing. It's all of that classic thing. If and you get this after wars, when you try and start production up again, there isn't enough stuff to be able to produce, which means all of it goes up in value. And of course, they've printed off a load of money and they're generally not trying to recruit that, as you sort of touched on, because we've had this thing of quantitative easing, which is essentially printing money, but you put it into bonds and banks, which means that it's got some value that you can attach to it and therefore less likely to muck up the economy. But you keep printing money and you have less stuff. That's where we're getting this inflation from. But it's like, what is any government meant to do about that if you've had to shut down factories all across the world because of COVID? You were inevitably going to have an inflation issue. It's just how quickly can you deal with it?
It was also a lot of voters were, you know, looking back on the Trump years and thought they were doing better back then, even though they had COVID, which is bizarre. But I think Biden just didn't run on a lot of the successes he had with unionized workers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really, you know, and I think him kind of, you know, when he ran on the campaign talking about getting rid of student loan debt and then kind of going back on that and getting rid of some of it, it's like, it's kind of pointless at that point. You know, a lot of these half measures he pulled out, I can imagine it annoyed a lot of voters. But Kamala Harris was a uniquely bad candidate. I don't think America's ready for a female president anyways. I think there's some misogyny there. But I think in terms of her as a person, you know, she doesn't have a lot of the hallmarks of a good politician. In the primary, she was really bad. You know, so her being there is just because Biden put her there in that sense. The fact they didn't rerun a primary, I think, was embarrassing, to be honest. And she just, I don't know what her team were thinking to like what she was running on. It didn't really make sense.
I think I defend it a little bit in the fact that if you've got 3 months to run it, what are you going to do? You could go and have your primary and try and build up a case for that. But by the time you've done that, you're down to 2 months, maybe a month left. And then you're like, you can't run a campaign in a month. It's impossible. I think Biden is at fault in the fact that he should have realized he was cognitively declining. But they were all propping up. Yeah. Do you remember seeing Jill Biden, after the debate, go, well done, like a school teacher?
I honestly think it was elder abuse at that point. Like, I think, because, you know, it's not his fault. He's in cognitive decline. Like, he was trying. I mean, when he accidentally introduced Zelensky as Putin or something like that at the summit, and then he was like, we got to beat Ukraine. And you're like, this man, he's gone. At that point, the whole world saw it. It's like, this man's finished. And at that point, they should have said, like, just like, it's over.
I think, I could critique the campaign. I do think broadly it was a good campaign. I think that while it's very compelling for us, I think the focus on democracy maybe was a bit of a misstep for her. I think she should have focused more on the economy. And like you said, I think Biden should have gone a year ago, have her as president, then run as an incumbent. That, I think, would have been the best avenue. But well, yeah, I think given the economic circumstance, she was always going to struggle. Given the misogyny element as well.
There's only one incumbent party since the pandemic that's done well. I think that's Spain. I think everyone else has either been either lost or done really badly in the post-elections. Like, we saw that in this country as well with the Tories. It wasn't, you know, the inflation really ticked up, and then, you know, Liz Truss had her genius idea and then she just made it worse. So, you know, like, they just didn't know how to handle it, and they just handled it wrong fundamentally. So I think that's one of the major issues. The inflation, like, it's the classic American thing. Obviously, the economy's stupid. Like, it does go back to that, how average people feel. And we saw that in the UK as well. Like, if average people aren't happy, they'll just vote for someone else. And then that's what we saw.
Simon. Is it one thing I would never understand politically, and this goes beyond America, is why is it that when money gets tight, people seem to lean right? You'd think that if you can't make ends meet, giving a tax break to millionaires is not... Well, I suppose the answer to that is you think that some of that money is going to come to you, but it bloody isn't. If you look at the redistribution of Trump's anticipated tax plan, the poorest percentages of Americans will actually end up paying more money.
Yeah. If he goes through with that tax plan, yeah.
Yeah,
that's absolutely what that's what most economists are saying. But there was something I thought that was quite interesting with what you've said. It's this obsession with certain groups for trickle-down economics, the idea that if you give those breaks to the rich, they'll then spend that money. That doesn't happen. Like, there's no evidence to show that has ever happened. In fact, the neoliberal argument that they keep going for with that was a Harvard review in 2004, which got, I think it was a student, another US student at a different university, who then started trying to go, oh, this is a really interesting topic. Let's see if I can back it up with data. And he couldn't back up the data. So he then went into finding out where the data sets had come from and found out they'd been falsified. And yet Liz Truss, Rees-Mogg, Nigel Farage, Donald Trump, they're all citing this neoliberal trickle-down economics thing. It doesn't work. So yeah, it's exactly as you said. Why is that? And I think to answer that question, I think it's the press. I think Musk, in what he's done, was far more important than we've realized. I think he's entered in as the new Rupert Murdoch. He's got himself a social media platform, which is up there with any of the big newspapers that Murdoch ever ran. And he's able to influence. We've had something very strange happen on a number of Twitter accounts and a bit on YouTube, where most accounts, I've heard from several accounts that 100 to 200 followers just disappeared after the election, immediately after Trump had gone and won. And you're going, that's really odd. Why has that happened? Why do they all shut down? They're clearly all bots. It's either that or Musk is like filtering them out, or people have quit Twitter because they go, right, well, democracy's at end. I'm sick of Twitter. They back Trump.
I mean, he got rid of Ken. He banned Ken Klippenstein off Twitter because he was talking about Musk's links to Trump. And that was the reason that Musk got rid of him.
Got rid of who?
Ken Klippenstein. He works for The Intercept. I don't know if he's still there. He was at The Intercept. He's a big investigative journalist, one of the best in America. And it's one of the reasons they banned him off Twitter. But then once all that stuff came out, they had to reinstate him on Twitter because it was just too embarrassing for Musk because people were just asking about it. So, you know, there is a big connection there with Elon playing defense for Donald Trump. And I guarantee the algorithms are all out of whack as well. It's just the algorithms are opaque. We don't know how it works. The Facebook one's pretty bad. I think Zuckerberg's another one because they boost certain things based on interactions and things like that, which, you know, it's not necessarily the best comments that get put to the top. It's the ones with the most interactions. And that's a big problem, because it pushes people who are looking to troll and looking to argue with each other to the top of the algorithm.
Well, it's all about boosting engagement, isn't it? I mean, have you guys heard of the dead internet theory? I'm really starting to think there might be something to that.
I saw a video for that on YouTube, but I didn't watch. What's the theory?
It's basically the idea, and I think it's becoming true, that a huge percentage of the interactions online is just bot to bot. And I think they've done studies in it. I mean, don't quote me on it, but I think they know that quite a large percentage of it. And, you know, when you look at Facebook, you see like the weird AI slop on Facebook, and it's not necessarily insidious, but just these sort of very bizarre AI images. You know, and I think that perceived engagement with a topic is very often thrown off by bots. You know, it's and I do think a huge number of people you might spend hours arguing with on Twitter or whatever just don't exist. You know, you can set up a GPT client to just say argue in favor of the Reform Party for me, and it will just do it. You know.
So what does this? So how does it work then? So let's say I type in a message onto Twitter. Mm. How does chat end up being able to respond to that?
Well, I don't know exactly the functionality of it, but I know that basically ChatGPT, you can use what's called GPT clients, and you can basically give it access to certain devices. You can give it access to Twitter and stuff like that, and it will effectively just engage with it. There was someone set up a GPT to try and promote a Bitcoin or something, and it I'll simplify the story and send it to you, but it. This thing actually kind of got freakishly good at it and boosted a coin and made something like $1 million with no human involvement, just tweeting out nonsense about this Bitcoin for, you know, indefinitely, basically.
That's crazy. Yeah. And it actually made money as a result of doing it. Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when it gets even more depressing when you think about the environmental impact of all this stuff. I mean, you think if you've got server farms churning away carbon dioxide and a huge portion of what they're storing is just robots talking to each other. I mean, Musk talked about this, then obviously never went through with it. But, you know, whether there needs to be some better verification for individuals. If I'm not suggesting that you should be able to trace someone back, but, you know, in order to set up an account on Twitter, you need to actually demonstrate you're human with a bit more than here's my email, you know, like,
especially with what's going on at the moment. I actually wrote a letter to Ofcom. I'm not saying they'll do anything, but at least something's on record. I wrote a letter to Ofcom today going, are you aware of this? Are you going to do something about it? Because that's quite serious. If every major left-wing pro-EU account had 200 bots targeting it, someone's gone out of their way to go and find us. Someone's gone out of their way to target us. Someone's gone out of their way to put and smear those groups. Because that's the only reason I assume you would put a bot on there. And as soon as the election's done, they've ghosted. That's the type, I mean, you know, we keep talking about this on the show, Russian interference. It wouldn't surprise me if it's that. It wouldn't surprise me if people have been hired. The rumors I'm hearing is that these bot centers are set up in Israel and parts of Northern Africa and Central Africa. That's where I'm hearing that these farms are being set up. And that's not just bots. That's also like essentially a call center where people are being able to respond.
I was going to say, have you seen a film called The Dissident about Jamal Khashoggi? So they talk about Saudi Arabia. They had images of it, basically what you described. It was referred to as the bees, I think. It was, or might be the wasps. It was basically, well, they're not bots, but a human-run troll farm of people each operating 50 Twitter accounts, doing nothing but hammering anti-government stuff and pushing pro-government stuff.
We're in serious trouble, aren't we? The way I'm looking at this, we're actually in serious trouble and we're not doing anything to deal with it because we've got it into our heads that by having any level of interference like that is an impingement on free speech. Mm. And whilst you've got these platforms, but none of them are free, they're not, they keep being called, what are they called? What do they call them? Some of the people on the right who defend it?
The marketplace of ideas?
Or
the
marketplace almost like a marketplace. No,
town square.
Forum. Town square. They're calling it a town square, but it's privatized. And you can only get on the main stage if you pay money. And the more money you pay, the bigger the microphone they give you.
Not town square at all.
Not town square at all.
No.
I mean, it's, you know, having a discussion with you, I'm just starting to realize, like, we're in deep shit. Like, deep shit. And I think...
And you wonder why I look concerned.
it you know, the analogies with what Hitler did and how he came into power, he used all modern tech to brainwash people. And it's you brought this up earlier and I didn't say anything, but you said about these people being called stupid. I think we'll go back onto the point about why we all think Trump won and Harris lost. Hitler used brand new technology and people weren't used to it. But at the same time, Germany was pretty learned, pretty clever, pretty progressive. You know, like they'd taken the American Constitution, they'd taken a bit from British Parliament, from US Congress. And how that was all set up, they were well-read, they had universities, they had free education, women and men over 20 could vote, which most people don't realize. Were those 37% that voted for Hitler, which they did, 37% was the highest number, were they stupid? Were they racist? It's the same question that I see get thrown out on news media when people sort of suggest that you shouldn't call MAGA people stupid. What do you say about that 37% that voted for him?
I feel that, you know, there is obviously a big contingent that is just unintelligent, but I don't think it's, I think it's quite reductive and it's not very helpful. And you know, and ultimately you're gonna need to reach those people, aren't you? And just saying, when you say someone's stupid, it doesn't really provide a way to reach them, you know. I think some people are stupid, but also I think we need to, you know, people operate in very different politically, you know, information ecosystem. So you need to get at that. And also just kind of understanding the motivations of people. If you're a diehard Christian fundamentalist, democracy is just this sort of pesky thing that get, because you're right, aren't you? And democracy is just this kind of pesky thing that gets in the way of you spreading God's will. You know, that you're not, it's not stupidity, it's just a very fundamentally different way of thinking. And I think it's just phenomenally different ideals and people very siloed off in their own information ecosystems.
I think one could say though and argue that being influenced by religion in itself has a degree of ignorance to it. It's not about thinking for yourself or thinking critically about anything, but being guided and almost brainwashed into a certain way of thinking that, you know, keeps you from being more informed about the world than you are.
Have you ever seen a chart of education levels versus voting intent? You know, there is a very direct correlation between the amount of education you've received and your likelihood to vote Democrat. Mm. I mean, you think as a Republican, you'd see that, you'd go, look very good for me, does it?
Yeah.
Sunak said it. Why would I support universities when they're not going to vote for us? That was the rumor that was kicking around, that he said that. And you're like, are you mad? You need those universities. We need people coming up with great ideas.
It looks like Trump managed to get a lot of those university-aged men to vote for him. Again, I think, as Maj said, using Joe Rogan, right-wing, shilly sort of influencers, so Joe Rogan and the other sort of people like Ben Shapiro and Nick Fuentes and all of that, you know, that sort of for some reason speak to these people, but they speak to them purely because they, you know, there is a common denominator of being white and male, that is, you know, that is one of the ways that, as Maj says, Trump seemed to break through to those people that would usually be very left-leaning because of the fact that they are students and want to sort of expand their mind. But a lot of these people, they come from fundamentally religious backgrounds, so have a way of worldview already set into them from a very, very young age.
I think there's something to be said about that youth generation coming through, because I'm starting to hear it from different sources, the same thing, that there's a lot of mistrust and they don't know who to trust. It's not that they just mistrust. It's like, I don't know who to trust out of this. And that's not just from the media, but that's within social groups. And I'm hearing this from multiple sources, all anecdotes. I'm happy to be wrong on this, but it wouldn't surprise me, especially after COVID and our issues with social media and our addictions to phones and social media, that people aren't connecting as much and as frequently as they had in the past. And that makes me go, and it was something I saw with Trump and not with Harris. Trump went on multiple podcasts that were not political, but they had huge followings. So the Undertaker from the WWF or WWE, as it now known, he went on his podcast and got endorsed by him and his wrestling buddy Kane, who I think was a governor or a mayor as well, so had some political clout on their podcast. He then went on Rogan. He went on Logan Paul's podcast. And there was another one, a stand-up comedian who's pretty big. So you're going, he's just done a tour where he's hit 50 million people. Trump kept saying on the Rogan interview that it was Barron who actually suggested that, and that none of his guys had realized how big those podcasts were. But the thing I found with that as well, those guys are trusted by their viewers. And part of that trust is the fact that they're not reading off a script. They're just shooting from the hip. And I think there's something to be said about that, combined with the mistrust that we've got going through through society, and especially the youth. And I think they nailed it there. And Harris didn't do that. What Harris did was scripted. Predominantly scripted all the way through. And she was, according to Rogan, she was invited on and was Waltz. And Vance and Trump went on the biggest podcast and those two didn't. And you go, that's a mess up. You should have gone on because you could have got a couple of million bucks.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that they invited them.
I think because they're not used to unscripted content, I think Waltz would have been fine, but I don't think Harris would have done that well, to be honest, because he would have brought up Gaza and she would have had no good response, I don't think.
She did call her daddy, which was similar to Joe Rogan, I guess. Well, not similar, but similar scale to Joe Rogan, I should say.
I missed that then, in which case I take that back. She was actually hitting some of the podcasts, was she?
But she should have. If given the opportunity, she 100% should have done
it. She should have gone and done Rogan, 100%. Yeah, because again, that demographic. Sorry, imagine me to interrupt. Yeah. That demographic. Is the demographic that she should have been targeting from the beginning anyway. The sort of, I don't know, centrist, sort of maybe more center-right sort of young men. If she had gone on there and maybe showed a little bit of charisma and answered some difficult questions, It could have been a game changer.
I think she handled Trump well. That's why he didn't go back on for round two. She kicked it off.
The debate. She totally ruined him. Yeah, because in that environment, a script works. It's TV.
Do you think it was scripted though? I thought it was off the cuff.
You have pre-planned lines though. Like,
yeah, that agree. I agree with that.
Yeah. So like, it kind of, you know, like, oh, your rallies were small. It's like, okay, great.
Yeah, she wrote that before she showed up on there. Like, I think she was going to use it. You know,
I think the thing with Rogan as well. I think the thing with Rogan as well, like, you know, Trump didn't lose any voters by going on there, because if you think about it, those typically the people that age don't vote. So those people got like a really fresh view of him. And we're like, okay, you know, they might have liked him, they might have not have. But these are people who don't typically vote anyways. So he got a free hit there. So she should, if she felt confident, she probably should have done it. But, you know, I think the thing is, new media is so, it's still kind of, people don't understand it. I think that's one of the major problems. People don't understand like the power of like podcasts and stuff, especially how parasocial people's relationships are with like podcast hosts, especially Rogan specifically. And so, you know, he got a free hit. He did okay. He spoke as well as he normally does. And, you know, that was one of the things that got him over the line. He won the popular vote somehow. I just don't get it. You know, some of his voters are idiots, to be honest. The ones who don't understand how tariffs work, but then how educated are people on tariffs? Because the idea is, if you tariff, you know, other people's goods, then you'll you know, cause domestic production to go up. But the only way you'll do that is through subsidies and forcing domestic production to go up, really. Otherwise, you're just going to pay the tax.
You'd hope the candidate himself would understand them.
Yeah.
Well,
that was an issue. And again, that's not something you're educated about in school. You don't need that to get a job. You know what I mean? And that was the thing with Trump as well. He used a lot of that sort of those little talking points that he made them sound wonderful. And because people didn't know what he was actually talking about, they were like, well, he's making it sound good. So that must be all right. You know, it must be a good thing for us. Because why would he steer us wrong?
I think there's something in that. I think there's you're right. Why would he steer us wrong?
Because Trump, I mean, but
he
you
only
know.
Attempted a coup on the Capitol building.
Yeah, why would he steer you wrong? I mean, yeah.
I mean, that in itself was enough that should have put everyone off from voting him. And they just, so there's two things to that. There's those podcasts were softball podcasts. None of them are going to hit hard in those questions. None of them. Like, Rogan admitted that he deliberately softballed, and he said he was going to do the same if Harris had gone on there.
I don't think he would have softballed. I don't think he would have softballed.
I was about to say,
he would never have softballed Harris.
I don't think he would have done it. I never have used it, yeah.
Yeah, there's that debate that could have been had there. But I think she's savvy. If she can deal with Trump, she could deal with Rogan and dispatch him. I don't think she would have had much of a problem with that. I think there's something also to be said, and this is what a lot of those far-right leaders have done in the past. Actually, I think what Trump has done has been more about Hugo Chavez than I'd say Adolf Hitler when I'm looking at the detail. Some of the stuff is, but Hugo Chavez seems to be actually like what Trump's carbon copied, which is quite shocking when I've been looking into the details. One of the things is, when those dictators come into power, what they generally do is say, don't listen to anyone else, just listen to me. Everyone else is telling you a lie, I'm telling the truth. And if they can show congruence in that, they can show that their words reflect their character and they can give some evidence to support that. They act like they're some sort of strong guy. And it's always, almost always, when there's economic difficulty, people get so desperate to get out of the situation, they'll listen to that point of view even more. And once they seem to get embedded in that thinking, it's really hard for them to knock it out of their system, because they've basically said, I think you are the only true source of information and nothing else matters. And I think that's part of the reason why there was a lady, I'll never forget, she was being interviewed by Clapper, and Clapper turned around and said about Obama's birth certificate, and she said, I don't believe he was born here. I want to see the birth certificate. I don't think he was, I don't think he's American. I think there's lots about it. And Clapper goes, so who would you believe? Would you take a witness like his mum? No, she's biased. And then he just said the exact same thing about Trump and said, right, so Donald Trump, do you think he was born here? Yes. Well, how do you know? We've got no witnesses. Oh, because, you know, he's got a birth certificate. So is Obama. And then he went, oh, well, what about a witness? Would that work? And she was like, well, yeah. What about his mum? Well, yeah, I trust his mum. And you're like, wow, you've just used your logic and you've totally segued into this direction where that set of logic works for Trump and that same set of logic will not work for Obama.
There's a difference.
That's it.
There's a difference between the two.
Which is?
Donald's white.
He's orange.
So he must be trustworthy.
He's going to be more trustworthy. And that's how a lot of white people think in America, unfortunately. And, well, it's not unfortunate. It's just fact. It's truth. But when you, as you were telling the story, all I could think about was that woman, I bet 100 pounds that woman was white.
She was.
Yeah. So she's going to trust the white person first. And that's it.
You ever heard that Muhammad Ali?
All boils back down to it, you know?
You ever heard that Muhammad Ali quote about white, everything being white?
Go ahead.
Mother, how come is everything white? I said, why is Jesus white with blonde and blue eyes? Why is the Lord's Supper all white men? Angels are white. Pope and the Mary and every, even the angels. I said, Mother, when we die, do we go to heaven? She said, naturally, we go to heaven. I said, well, what happened to all the black angels when they took the pictures? I said, oh, I know. If the white folks was in heaven too, then the black angels were in the kitchen preparing the milk and honey. I said, listen, you quit saying that. Well, I was always curious, and I always wondered why I had to die to go to heaven. Why I couldn't have pretty cars and good money and nice homes now. Why do I have to wait till I die to get milk and honey? And I said, Mama, I don't want no milk and honey. I like steaks and I said, milk and honey is a laxative anyway. Did they have a lot of bathrooms in heaven? So anyway, I was always curious. I always wondered why. You know, Tarzan is the king of the jungle in Africa. He was white. White man. I saw this white man swinging around Africa with a diaper on, hollering, oh! Do you all see Tarzan over here?
Right. Show
Tarzan? Yeah. And all the Africans, so he's beating them up and breaking the lion's jaw. And here's Tarzan talking to the animals, and the Africans been there for centuries, and he yet can't talk to the animals. Only Tarzan can talk to them. I always wonder why. And Miss America was always white. All the beautiful brown women in America, beautiful suntans, beauty shapes, all type complexions, but she always was white. And Miss World was always white. And Miss Universe was always white. And then they got some stuff called White House cigars, white swan soap, king white soap, white cloud tissue paper, white rain hair rinse, white tornado flow wax. Everything was white. And the angel food cake was the white cake, and the devil food cake was the chocolate cake. I said, Mama, why is everything white? I always wondered, you know, and the president lived in the White House. And Mary had a little lamb, his feet as white as snow, and snow white. And everything was white. Santa Claus was white. And everything bad was black. The little ugly duckling was the black duck. And the black cat was the bad luck. And if I threaten you, I'm going to blackmail you. I said, Mama, why don't they call it white male? They lied too.
Jesus Christ. If Jesus was a real person, white. He would never have been white.
Oh, we have Korean Jesus, guys. Come on. You know, every country has a Jesus. There's Korean Jesus.
please tell us all about Korean Jesus.
I know he's in 22 Jump Street, and I know Ice Cube told the guy to stop praying to Korean Jesus because I think he had Korean people's problems to deal with, and they told him to go on with his job. If I remember the film correctly, that is what happened. So there's a fact about Korean Jesus.
I think
but but what you're saying and what Muhammad Ali was saying is completely correct. Everything's cocaine, white.
Cocaine's white.
I thought he only got halfway through the quote. What was the end bit? I still haven't heard the punchline.
The end bit was not cocaine is white. There's just no way he said that.
It's just him listing white things.
That's wishful thinking for tomorrow night, isn't it, mate?
One of the arguments for a lot of things being white, even though it's detrimental to us, is because it's considered purer.
Yes.
So, like, you have white bread. But actually, that's gone through a process that's actually not very good for our digestive system. But people buy it regardless. As a result of it being white, is the theory the same with cocaine and why
white
it's so
is
popular?
Clean.
White's clean is the belief. Sugar's brown. It's not fucking white. It's gone through a process to turn it white because it makes it look purer, which is fucking weird. Why would you do a process to make it look white? It's more sellable, would be the argument. I'd be happy to be proven wrong on that research, but it goes in with that. I'm sorry. As I said, I was going
to makes complete sense to me. But as I said just now, in your other analogy, when this woman was asked, straight up, she's a white woman. Of course, I'll trust her.
Pepper asked another woman about whether or not they would vote in Hillary Clinton. She said, no, she's a woman. She's probably more likely to go to war. To which Pepper went, sorry, every president, every American president has been a man. Like,
how they got, yeah. How do you know? How do you know that? But they think that, but they're conditioned to think that women are more emotional in general, in this sort of misogynistic sort of like way that, so they'll be more easy to fly off the handle and just, I don't know, nuke a country. It's so ridiculous when you think about it, right? But that is unfortunately how these, particularly moronic moron MAGA people think.
But then it goes back to that thing. Are they stupid or is it conditioning? We had a great chat with Liz Webster last week or the week before where she was talking about how she got she wanted to get hypnotized. And the guy who came in to hypnotize everyone, Liz confronted her afterwards being like, you didn't hypnotize me, why not? And he said about a third of people are able to be hypnotized.
No.
And you then go, I wonder how much Trump speeches, and I know for a fact that Adolf Hitler's speeches have got a rhythm, a somewhat hypnotic rhythm to them.
His whole weave, that he likes to call it now, his whole little weave is deliberately designed. Of course it is. He wouldn't keep repeating it to every city that he went to. It's deliberately designed. Those people, you saw them in the back. An hour into those speeches, they were bored. They were so bored, but they were half asleep. They're taking in the bits and pieces that it's designed to put into them. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, not so much hypnosis, but I think there is something to be said with politicians with certain affectations. And I think the person who's mastered this is Boris. You know, his family call him Alex. And BBC journalists have said he specifically scruffs up his hair before an interview. TV. And I think that the reason for it is genuinely just so he's remembered. You see it on a different way with going through TikTok. People will just do a funny little quirk so you remember them. I genuinely think that was a lot of the thinking behind Boris's behaviour. And a similar thing, I think Boris is more of a natural personality, but he's a memorable guy. You can't say that away from him.
It's true. It does probably.
There's a lot I would like to take away from Boris, just generally.
Did you see him on Channel 4?
It was absolutely embarrassing.
She slammed him pretty bad.
And she tore him into one. Emily Maitlis, destroyed him.
He got sent home because he kept plugging his book as well, so that was funny. Yeah.
Fired him.
I mean, Maitlis is great, though.
Said you're done. With Trump, like, I'm just looking here, like, I can see Amal Rajan was interviewing someone about Trump talking about putting 10 to 20% tariffs on all imported goods. And I did see an interesting video of a MAGA guy where someone explained how tariffs work to him. Yeah. And he was like, like, there's going to be a big trade war coming in again between, I think, Europe and America and also China and America. So it should be quite interesting to see how that one plays out, because I don't think it went well for him last time. And if people think inflation is bad now, you know, tariffs and things like that will drive it up, especially if there's not enough domestic production. He lost in, I think, the court case he had against China in the WTO regarding some of the tariffs he put on. This was a good few years ago, and they found in favor of China. So, I think we're going to see another trade war happening again, because this guy's a lunatic. He doesn't understand how trade works. That's the problem. So we'll see how that one goes. Should be quite interesting. In terms of his other economic policies, I haven't really looked into them as much beyond like tariffs and stuff. But I think in terms of the international scene, like, it's a disaster for NATO. The only positive is a lot of countries have realized they had to take defense into their own hands. Japan is one. Germany was another. I think the UK as well. When they saw Trump kind of talking about isolationism and really going after Europe for not spending up in defense, countries did bolster it, and I think that helped against Russia's invasion of Ukraine a bit. Fundamentally, it's a disaster for most countries, I think, that are reliant on America. It's a disaster for Ukraine, because I can see him forcing Ukraine to cede a lot of land. So that's going to be a huge problem. And it's a problem. It's going to be a big problem in Palestine as well, where I can see him, basically, he's going to allow Israel, I think, to take most of northern Gaza and also probably parts of Lebanon. I can imagine that would happen as well. This is for the international scene. This is a meltdown. You know, he could start beef with Iran. I think that was one of the things he was discussing with Netanyahu. I mean, this is just awful for like the international community that scumbag's back again. You know, the guy. Let's be honest. The felon, the actual criminal who they brought back, is going to be a nightmare on the international scene. That is the thing I'm most nervous about. You know, there's already enough people in my life making jokes about seeing the Donbass. And I'm like, fuck my life, guys. I no, less of that. So it's not good at all.
What do you think it is that he's going to do? Because he said he can shut it down within 24 hours. So I think that was...
That's not going to happen.
He's going to stop arming them. That's all it is. You know, all the weapons the Americans give that Ukraine's so reliant on, he'll just shut it down. You know, he'll stop arming them. Well, what are you going to do at that point? Throw your gun at Russian soldiers? Like, you know, all of the land that Ukraine took, they're probably going to be forced to cede that or forced to retreat from that anyway. So they're not going to be able to hold it, not without the munitions they need. You know, they're very reliant on those that long-range artillery. I can't remember what it's called. HIMARS. Mm. You know, that's the thing that's really carried Ukraine through this war. One of the things anyways, they ain't getting more of those. They ain't getting more ammunition of it.
The idea that you can negotiate with Putin in a position of we withdrawing funding is a joke. You know, so, you know, I mean, I'm not saying Kamala Harris would have stopped it on day one, but, you know, she'd have kept up the pressure in order to push him into a position of negotiation. You know, under Trump, he's essentially just going to go, here's my laundry list of demands. You know, and he put out a list of demands, which are all obviously a joke, you know, but they included things like Ukraine stripping their military down to a minuscule size, Ukraine not joining the NATO and all this kind of stuff. And you just think, if you do those things, which, you know, under Trump, abandoning them unless Europe really steps up to the plate. What the fuck is going to stop him just starting this again in a year's time from his newly established front line? Or what, you know, and actually this is why I think Europe does, you know, I mean, it's not a position I like to take, but I have come around even before this, the fact that I think Europe really needs to step up military funding. And I think we should look at some kind of integrated European defence force. Because actually, if we don't, you know, the only thing that people like this understand is strength. You know, with Hitler, there was the policy of appeasement, where he went, all right, you're having that, but it's your last bit. All right, you can have that, but it's your last bit. You know, if we don't draw a line in the sand, I think that Eastern Europe is in danger.
And he gave instructions on a couple of occasions, I think when they walked into the Rhineland, that if they were to face any French opposition, to back off. And interestingly, Mussolini, when Hitler first went to the southern border to try and take Austria by force, Mussolini put troops on the border and he backed off. And there is an element in what you're saying. I'm just verifying what you're saying. It's projection through strength.
Mm.
And then with the Czech Republic, I think I worked it out. If Hitler had just invaded the Czech Republic with its defense system and everyone piled in immediately, he would have been surrounded. I think he was outnumbered 2-1, which are enough to be, you know, statistically, it should be enough to be able to take out Germany. But again, we didn't. We didn't do any of that. We just, as you said, we ceded. So it's interesting that you say that, like, and it makes you wonder what you could do with putting Putin off from salami tactics.
Well, you continue to fund Ukraine. You allow them to use missiles outside of the distance radius that we've currently. I think the UK did allow the use of Storm Shadows, but America never allowed the use of HIMARS. Other than a certain distance from the front line. Mm. So, of course, Putin just puts his long-range weapons just behind that radius. You know, I'm not suggesting that NATO should have direct involvement, but I do think that we should continue to fund Ukraine.
There's one thing historically that would probably put a pretty quick end to this, which would be to provide nuclear weapons to Ukraine. Historically, as soon as you do that, I'm not saying at the moment, I'm saying once you've got peace terms in place, you say, right, here's 5 nukes. Is he likely to invade after that? Probably not. It's always that consideration where you go, right, that's the end of that. I can't go in there anymore. It's arguably why Iran has been pushing their program so quickly, because they've seen what happens in the Middle East with countries that don't have nukes. And as a result, if you've got them, you don't get invaded by the Americans.
It's what I'd like to see. And I don't think that a negotiated peace is likely. I'd like to see a situation similar to something like Northern Cyprus. You never cede land, but you just draw a line and you stop killing each other over it, a ceasefire line. And you just go, fuck you, that's ours. You're just in it at the moment. There's not much we could do about it. And then you hopefully stay at that line. And then, you know, and then NATO needs to reinforce Ukraine heavily on that line once the ceasefire is held. You know, that's the position I'd like to push Putin to.
I think we'll see a negotiated settlement. I think Ukraine will have to give up certain areas. I don't think they've, without that level of support, Europe don't have it. We don't have the manufacturing capability to ramp up for artillery and things like that. That's one of the things that have really hampered them. A lot of these companies don't want to mass produce shells and then in a few years' time have no one to sell them to. It's one of the major problems, and the governments don't want to take the risk because none of them thought Ukraine would even last this long anyways. So that's one of the major problems we're running into. Even the UK, like, they're taking stuff from stockpiles, and I don't think they've even put the money in to replace them. That's one of the major problems that we're having right now. Our manufacturing, you know, for shells and things is a complete disaster. The EU do have their own kind of deals with, like, Norway and things like that in order to secure more procurement and in order to ramp it up. But, you know, the UK being outside the EU is a kind of a big problem for that, because we would have been involved in those deals if we were still there, and we could have ramped up manufacturing because we wouldn't have all the supply chain problems we have now. But, you know, what's the point of the UK really ramping up manufacturing for export when getting stuff into the UK is a nightmare and getting stuff out of the UK is even worse? So it's bad news all around, really. And, you know, Labour are talking about increasing, you know, defence spending by a tremendous amount. I don't think it'll go down well with people when you've got, like, winter fuel allowance, when you've got two-child cap. I think that's the parallel people are going to draw. You know, they're going to say, you're sending money to Ukraine again, but there's nothing here. Like, that's one of the problems. Like, I think you have to kind of do both things. You have to kind of level up your own country as well. That's one of the things that countries are running into, I believe.
What worries me about the idea of a negotiated settlement is Putin will almost certainly have demands around Ukraine's military numbers and NATO membership. And I just feel that that's a recipe for this to repeat.
Do you think it would work if you put a UN security force on the border? And they'd have to go through the United Nations to be able to... It's one of the things that I've always said that they should have done with Gaza. They should have put... The UN should have stepped in and gone, right, we're on that border, neither side's coming through.
They have peacekeepers.
Either side.
They have peacekeepers in Lebanon, though, and Israel don't care about those. I mean, they've taken shots at UN peacekeepers, and the UN's done absolutely nothing, because the problem with the UN is the United Nations Security Council is the worst, one of the worst systems. It's an abomination. It's an absolute abomination. Like, and Russia do have a veto, and they're going to be like, yoink, sorry, you're going to do nothing. So that's one of the big problems with the way the UN is set up. So even with peacekeepers, like, there's no way they're going to stance up against Russia military. No one's that stupid. They're going to shoot at them, and they're not going to fire back, because it's going to escalate. That's what the situation we're seeing in Lebanon now.
The other idea then that comes to mind that could be done is put American and British bases on the border. So once you have the peace deal done, you then allow to have American and British bases or whoever on the border instead of having a patrol. And that might be a solution, because then you don't need a UN resolution. You can just go, we're doing this, eat that.
They've done that with certain countries in and around Ukraine, I think. Like, it's called the tripwire thing, where as soon as they go in, those soldiers, they're dead. Like, they're not going to make it out. It's a sacrifice, basically, in order to start a war. So I don't know how popular that's going to be overall. But I think, like, the other fear is, you know, if Russia does go into a NATO member country, is, you know, are the rest of the other NATO members going to back it, especially America? The only real shining light is Poland, because Poland have got, like, a really cracked military now. So they put loads of money into it. I think they invested a lot of their GDP into it. So he's definitely not stepping to Poland anytime soon. But a lot of countries are kind of slacked off. Yeah,
the high spending in Europe. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if Putin steps into it, NATO country, my personal feeling is you've just got to go all out, because otherwise what's the whole institution for?
Yeah,
the whole point was attack on one is attack on all. If you don't stick to that, you know, it's not a deterrence.
I think he's going to continue with his destabilization campaign. That's what we saw in Moldova. I don't think he's got enough money for another land invasion. And I think what we've learned is the Russian military has been found wanting in Ukraine. Like, it's been a really pathetic campaign for the world's second so-called strongest military. And, you know, they've been beaten by, you know, weapons from, like, the 90s. Yeah, no, I think, you know, we saw their destabilization tactics in Moldova. It didn't fully work out, but it was close. It was closer than anyone would have liked. I think they had their recent, like, presidential elections as well. I'd have to ask someone at work about that to see what they think. But the pro-EU candidate won. I think it was close again. Apparently €50 is a lot over there. So the bribes were like, you know, even though they seem low to us, I think it must have been worth decent money to some of the people over there. So if we do bring back a Russia segment, I'll probably be more equipped to handle that after a few conversations with people. But you know, like he's still trying. That's the thing, and I think he's learned destabilization is going to be the way to go. Just throw money at it, and that's one thing the Kremlin does have. You know, it's still sanctioned, but they still have a lot of money. And you know, it's easy for those agents to bribe people compared to when they were discussing how easy it's going to be to take Ukraine, and they're like, yeah, easy. You know, one day, 2 days, you'll be able to take it, and then they're like, guys, why are we still doing this? So, I think that's one of the other concerns. I think he's going to get better at doing that kind of stuff.
They did it in Georgia, didn't they?
Yeah, I haven't seen the results for that. What's happened in Georgia?
Basically, there was this great big groundswell of movement towards the pro-EU candidate. And then, oh, surprise, surprise, look at that. The pro-Russian candidate won. And I think it is widely accepted in the international community that this was a rigged election.
I think Orban announced the result of that early, way earlier than he should have done. I think that's one of the things people kind of twigged. Though. So that must have been that election then, because there was one he tweeted about where he said, oh, congratulations on such and such person winning again. And I was like, and all the community notes were saying, like, you know, the election's not been, it's not over yet. The votes aren't all been counted. What are you doing? Pretty sure you can schedule tweets out as well. So maybe Orban can learn something from that. Maybe schedule a tweet out a bit later.
I'm sorry to say, that's an hour. We're done. Guys, thank you ever so much. To our viewers, if you really enjoy listening to these guys, there's links in the description. Please go and check that out and have a click. Once again, thanks for listening on that cheerful note.
Next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.